Wake up, America. It's Morning Air with John Morales.
Si, senor.
Sarah Tafoya.
Happy Easter.
And Glenn Leverins.
This is Morning Air.
On Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Good morning and happy Easter. Thanks for joining us for Morning Air here on Relevant Radio and on the Relevant Radio app. It's Glenn and Sarah in for John. This hour we'll talk humility. That's right, radio announcers talking humility. It's probably a good thing, right? Harry Kramer joins us before the hour is through, and we'll also take a look at some of the Eucharistic happenings here during this year that'll culminate with the Eucharistic Congress coming up in Indianapolis this July as well. The home of a new Relevant Radio station, by the way, too. Hello to Indy. We'll try and get the words out fast for you there as well, of course, with the racetrack and all. And in the meantime, we're celebrating Do-It-Yourself Day by building our brand new radio show all by ourselves. No, a lot of help behind the scenes. But Sarah, for Do-It-Yourself Day, you gonna, you know, build anything or fix anything at home today to celebrate?
You know, it might be best in honor of Do-It-Yourself Day to not build anything myself. It might be safer for all those involved, you know, when it comes to that. There's been a couple holes that have accidentally, you know, somehow, for some reason, not really sure why, have showed up in our hallways and stuff at the house. And my feeble attempts to try my very best to try to cover up the hole. Now, the hole is covered and it is painted the right color. It does not look like it's clear that it's put something in front of it. Put a plant there, cover that up. It's pretty clear that was a very poor patch job that no one authorized me any kind of training to do. So, yeah, it's something I do, but, you know, my husband has to look the other way because he's like, again, you're doing it? Still failing, but still trying. Well, good. There's not a hole in the wall. So I might, just for the sake of my marriage, just keep a little distance on doing anything myself that has to do with a fix-it project today.
Yeah, Mr. Tafoya said, please nudge her in that direction, won't you? And so,
tell her to take a break.
Speaking of holes in the wall, believe it or not, mild-mannered Glenn Leverins has put holes in radio station walls not once but twice through the years.
Goodness.
You know, not out of anger, because I am a mild-mannered guy. The first time was my first full-time job and working nights. And, you know, back in the ancient times, before we really used a lot of computers in radio, you had this thing called the teletype that would print out all the news on a big roll of paper, and it would usually be outside of the studio because it was kind of a noisy thing. And there was a little break in the programming, something pre-recorded that was running. I believe it was the In Fisherman Radio Show. If people in the Midwest might have heard that on a station or two, maybe 5 minutes long during a big block of news and such, and I'm out at the teletype, you know, grabbing the latest news or weather. And then I noticed the show is winding down. It's my turn to get back on the air and make some noise, because you can't have dead air. And the nice cleaning crew had just come through and mopped the floor, and it was still a little bit wet. And I had to kind of make a U-turn into the studio and back between some equipment to get at the control board. And, well, the floor was very slick. And, you know, I made a nice slide as if I was sliding into second base, as opposed to just whoops and down. So it had momentum to it. And scrambled to get up, you know, saying some words that were best said before the mic was turned on, and you know, got on in time, and, you know, got some noise going on the air again, which was good. And I was looking around later, and it was an old building and kind of dumpy, and, you know, as some old stations were, especially small ones back in the day. And I'm noticing this chalky stuff on the floor, and then I look, and wait, that's part of the wall. That's, you know, that's part of the sheetrock there. And there is a footprint in the side of the wall pushed in an inch and a half or so, with my boot print on it. And, oh my goodness, that must have happened when I fell and slid. I didn't realize it at first. And, you know, being a new employee, I didn't know what our policy was for putting holes in the wall. So I didn't say anything and went home for the weekend on a Friday night there. And, you know, the part-timer, the naughty part-timer that would work on the weekend got blamed for it. And, you know, he was completely innocent. But yet, and then the owner, only semi-seriously, I ought to take that out of your paycheck. And I'm like, well, I ought to look into workman's comp. And so, you know, nothing further was said about that. And
really, in that situation, you'd be like, you know, my ankle really hurts, because there wasn't a sign out saying that the floor was slippery and there wasn't any dead air. So, I mean, can we call it even? I think it's where we're...
So, I think that's how it came out in the wash. And then there was another one we did, a newly remodeled Christian station later on in Minnesota. And they had made some new office spaces with the really thin sheetrock, not the three-quarter, but maybe the half-inch size or whatever. And I noticed this bug, because this was in the days where you had sometimes original station buildings were built near the transmitter towers, which were often built in swampy areas, and that was good for propagation of the signal for AM radio. And so maybe that's why there was this giant water bug crawling on the wall, kind of behind where the door was. And I thought, you know, I'll just smush it with my foot. And smush went the bug, and smush went the wall. And luckily it was behind the door. And I found a poster that covered that nicely, kind of going with your just hide the hole plan there. And so that's the
remind me to ask you to take your shoes off if you ever come visit my house. Just a little less impact. It seems like it might be. I got enough holes, okay, Glenn? anymore.
Do it yourself day. So I guess, you know, I didn't do any fixing on the first one, but a carefully placed poster helped the second one. And, you know, I don't know. I think, you know, YouTube videos are a great way to kind of learn how to do it yourself. I became expert. It was my Lenten penance last year, I think, to repair the garage door opener motor and the garage door and the motor again. And, you know, spurred on by YouTube videos, they help a little bit, you know, and one time did that to take the dryer apart and found all sorts of interesting things under the drum left from the previous occupants. And anyway, but I think it's a matter maybe more of nature than nurture. As an adopted kid, my dad was a great carpenter and fix-it man, and I didn't really inherit that because I wasn't technically related to him. I got to see a lot of it. I got to hand him tools like every Saturday of my life for the first 18, 20 years of my life. But, you know, I'm a very patient guy in general, but not so much with the home fix-it stuff. Sometimes you wish, Sarah, perhaps you could just smear a little peanut butter on something and it would stick together and that would do it. I mean, it works for bread. Why not that hole in the wall, perhaps?
Well, you know what? I've heard that that kind of stuff skips a generation. So it might not be related to being actually related, but you're right. Today also, another fun thing about today, while you're trying to do it yourself, is have a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, because it's peanut butter and jelly sandwich day. And it's not just the old, you know, just peanut butter, jelly on the bread anymore. There's so many fun ways to celebrate this with a variety of different food topic products, and you could they have all these different things at the store. But if you want to do something, do a food item yourself. I've seen the peanut butter and jelly French toast. Not sure that I'm sold on that, but peanut butter and jelly French toast, or this lovely, it's the peanut butter and jelly bacon burger. I don't know if you've ever thought, you know, peanut butter. I've heard peanut butter on the burger, but not peanut butter with jelly. And of course, just why not add bacon for flavor? It seems just
bacon makes everything.
It should be there.
Huh?
It should be there. You're going to have peanut butter and jelly. Have bacon. So you can add these new things into your repertoire and try out a variety of different products. They're not. I don't know about you, Glenn. Are you a jelly person or a no jelly person?
Not so much, you know. And with the peanut butter with the meat, I guess I was on board with that a long time ago when my folks would have bacon, lettuce, and tomato sandwiches. BLTs come up on the evening menu, and I wasn't so much as a little kid into the tomatoes and the lettuce, but I would end up having a toasted peanut butter sandwich with bacon myself, and somehow that seemed to work. But, you know, we used to, back in dinosaur times, before they invented chunky peanut butter, you know, with the little hunks of peanut in it, we would put crunchy stuff in our peanut butter sandwich, like chips, potato chips, corn chips. And that was a fun addition, because you had your bag lunch you brought to school back before hot lunch was invented. And we would, you know, accentuate the chips that were sent along. It was usually, you know, the peanut butter sandwich, some chips, an apple, and maybe a cookie sometimes. And so that was lunch for, you know, as long as I was handing my dad tools that many years, that was kind of the bag lunch. But hey, I did want to ask you, if you've come to the point with your kids' lives where it matters how you cut the sandwich, you know.
I think that's diagonal. Something that happens at birth. They seem to have a strange propensity for having their peanut butter and jelly a certain way, or their sandwich cut a certain way. I know, I think sometimes as a parent, you're watching way too much Pinterest, and so you're thinking, oh, the fun ways I can make sandwiches for my kids. And then they like don't want any of it. They don't want it to look, they just want to eat it. And you know, no crust, you know, my mom always cuts the crust off of everything. I'm like, I'm not cutting crust. I'm leaving crust on, you know. And, you know, then they were like, Grandma does it with no crust. She has cookie cutter shapes for the shape of the sandwich, you know, for like Christmas, there's snowmen and all this fun stuff. And I'm like, look, You got a sandwich. Here we go. The best I can do is cut it into two rectangles for you. Maybe a triangle if I go the other direction. I mean, does it fit in your lunchbox? That's what I'm mostly worried about. So, yeah. But if you're going to be, you know, trying to cater to them, every now and then I try to do something a little fun and pretend to be my mom. But I got to be me. I got to be true to me. I'm not a short order cook here, guys. Come on.
Oh, we'll pray for you. Better yet, we'll bring in a priest to pray for you. How about a vicar general, Father Scott Pogacnik from St. Cloud, Minnesota, talking about Eucharistic processions and one of those four routes making its way to Indianapolis this summer goes right through his church. We'll talk with Father Scott coming up next as we continue with Morning Air here on Relevant Radio and on the Relevant Radio app.
Peanut butter
and jelly.
Peanut butter
and jelly.
Then you take the peanuts and you mash them, you mash them.
Bringing the light of Christ to start your day.
Jump into the conversation. Call 888-914-9149.
Continues here on Relevant Radio and on the Relevant Radio app. Glenn and Sarah in for John today, talking the Eucharist here in our next segment. As a cradle Catholic, Sarah, was there a moment when kind of that light bulb went off about what the Eucharist really means?
Oh, I think that's a kind of an ongoing thing. I can't remember like one particular moment, but I just remember a lot of little moments that all kind of weave together. And part of that is just even, you know, even just this last Saturday at Holy Saturday Mass, there was, you know, all the people coming up to receive communion. I was sitting towards the front because I had been a reader, and this one particular family, you know, everyone's receiving either on the tongue or on the hand, and they knelt down to receive the Eucharist. There's no railing or anything. There's no cushion. They just individually each did that, and it struck me as like, you know, to receive Jesus, that they had that level of, you know, reverence for what they were about to receive, that even though it was like, you know, I think sometimes we think, oh, we're holding up the line, we don't want people to think we're too holy or something, but it really struck me that they, you know, no one else was doing it, and they did it anyways, just because that is how they wanted to, you know, put themselves in that place to receive Jesus that way. And it kind of gave me that next level of conviction, and not necessarily that I have to do that, but that how am I placing myself, where am I in my mindset when I am receiving communion? Am I in that place? Do I have that level of devotion and love for Jesus? It's a constant thing to constantly keep putting ourselves to make sure that we're revering God and Jesus in this beautiful way that He wants to be with us.
Oh, thanks for sharing that that beautiful reverence for the Eucharist, and one of the aims of this year with that focus on the Eucharist, and we really hope to increase that for everyone this summer in Indianapolis with the National Eucharistic Conference. On the way there, we'll have various Eucharistic processions from the four corners of our country. One of those corners finds that procession heading in the Marian route from the headwaters of the Mississippi right through the church where our next guest hangs out on a regular basis as Vicar General for the Diocese of St. Cloud, Minnesota. Father Scott Pogacnik joins us this morning, and he does on a regular basis on our Minnesota Relevant Radio stations too. Father, great to talk to you today.
Great to be with you as well, Glenn, and all of our listeners out there. Good morning.
Are you fired up with all the focus on the Eucharist this year?
Yeah, well, of course, right? We're in the midst of this, the octave of Easter, the explosion of grace that pours forth from the tomb, that pours forth into all the world. And so what's so beautiful is this whole thing will be kicked off right around the weekend of Pentecost, right? And so we have these beautiful 50 days of Easter. And then from there, right, the joy of the Holy Spirit will carry us through these powerful processions from all four corners. And we're so honored that one of those is going to begin right in our backyard here in Minnesota, right? And actually Bishop Cousins, who's obviously the chair of this kind of whole movement in his very humble diocese of Crookston, Minnesota, where the headwaters of the Mississippi begin.
And it's so great that procession will actually make its way around Minnesota, parts of Wisconsin, down through Illinois and into Indiana this summer. And what do you anticipate that'll be like for those in the area, in any of the you know, four corners of the country where this will start? You know, someone might be looking out their window, and there comes Jesus with a whole bunch of followers right down the road.
Yeah, and I think whenever there's a major shrine, right, people have experiences of processions, if you know, they've gone to a major Marian shrine, right? You've gone to Our Lady of Guadalupe, if they've gone to Lourdes, if they've gone to, you know, even, you know, the original Corpus Christi shrines that are in Orvieto or Bolsena in Italy, powerful spiritual experiences. I think this is something, in a sense, the procession is going to come to their back door, and those who are going to participate in it are going to be very excited to be on the journey. But it will catch a lot of attention, right, just from being in the public square. And this is exactly what the Lord Jesus wants us to do, and he wants us to be. It's like the apostles who are running about in these days of Easter. They're proclaiming the good news, and that's exactly what we want to do as we bring our Lord through the streets, bring him through so many highways and byways, calling people, right, to a deeper knowledge and love of him, a deeper conversion of heart, and to invite them to join us on this whole life's journey, this journey of faith that a procession really kind of illustrates for us. And I think in Minnesota, Glenn, we're just so proud, again, that in the life of Jesus, water was really important to him, right? We have powerful encounters along the Sea of Galilee. We have, you know, of course, his baptism in the Jordan, times in which he calmed the seas. And I think often of that Ezekiel passage, Ezekiel 47, where the water flows out from the temple. And so at least in this route here, right, we're going to be asking the people to flow just like that, to be life-giving waters, to be fresh waters, to renew the face of the earth. And that's what I really hope. I mean, being a priest of St. Cloud, we're going to have about 3 days in which the Eucharist, our Lord, processes through our diocese. He'll be touching 7 different parishes, but yeah, thousands and hopefully tens of thousands of people will have a chance to encounter him in a much more personal and an incarnational way. And so we're excited about those days following Pentecost and leading all the way to July when we make our way down to Indianapolis.
Talking about the Eucharistic procession, Eucharistic Congress, and much more with Father Scott Pogacnik joining us on Morning Air this morning on Relevant Radio here and on the Relevant Radio app. Do you anticipate, I mean, this is kind of a brand new thing in other cultures, in other times, it might have been more of a normalized thing, but here in 2024, this will be a brand new sight for so many to see a Eucharistic procession.
Yeah, and it takes some education, right, Glenn, in any of these cases, right? We've already been promoting it throughout the diocese, you know, you know, Easter liturgies and other things like this, just getting people a better sense of, you know, what does this mean to, you know, back in the day we would have maybe more popular Corpus Christi devotions and processions. We would have May crowning, in which, right, in the month of May, we'd have a Sunday in which Mary would be crowned to honor her. And so what we'll be, you know, a part of this whole adventure is the education as well. But a lot of times we just say, hey, like, join us, right? You don't have to know exactly what you're doing to be part of the family. Join us on the journey. A neat part of our procession here, Glenn, is we're going to be actually doing a 13-mile walk from the doors of the Cathedral of St. Mary in St. Cloud to one of our neighboring parishes. And that'll be a really tangible invitation to people to say, join us. You know, processions always cost us something, right? There's always a physical investment. We'll make sure that along the way, right, we have stations to help people with any kind of physical need, but that spiritual dimension, right, of really putting the body and the soul to work and to really follow the Lord, right? We're not leading him. He's the one that says, come and follow me and I will give you life, right? I've come to bring life and that you might have life and have it to the full. And so we don't exactly know when and how the Lord's going to speak to people on procession, but we know he will, right? That's what we have confidence in, is that he has a special word, a special movement of heart for all those who join him. Because we know, like, so many people carrying heavy burdens, right? They carry very heavy, heavy things of life. And this is one beautiful way in which we can carry them together. And that's the beautiful thing of a procession. This is not a lone ranger kind of solo tour. This is something in which we call all people to join and be those who follow in the footsteps of Christ.
I know the route that the Lord will take nearest my home. It'll be about maybe 3-4 miles away at the closest spot, which is very cool. But it's also going to be on the Friday of Memorial Day weekend when there'll be a whole bunch of traffic heading the other direction, going up north to enjoy lakes and fishing and things like that. And it's going to be heading by some spots where people are going to be lined up with their boats and campers waiting at stoplights and in traffic and seeing what in the world's going on. That's going to be very interesting, Father.
Yeah, hope it piques their interest. You know, maybe it can be a little bit of conversation starter as they get up to their lake place to be like, did you guys see those crazy Catholics and what were they up to again? What's going on down there? And, you know, I think a little bit is, you know, the route in Minnesota is going to start at Itasca. And, you know, originally there was that search for the headwaters of the Mississippi, that very word Itasca, Lake Itasca, comes really from a transformation of a word veritas caput, or true head, because they were looking for the true head of the Mississippi. Well, the whole world, right, all of us are looking, in a sense, searching for who the true God is, right? What is true about life? And so my hope is that those conversations start taking place to say, hey, because anytime someone sees something that's out of the norm, you know, we just hope it creates a holy curiosity in them to continue pursuing, you know, what God is at work doing. And we're so proud as well, Glenn. I mean, in the state of Minnesota here, up to my, you know, northwest of St. Cloud, of course, we have Bishop Cousins. To our northeast, we have Father Mike Schmitz. A lot of people know Father Mike out there. He's a homegrown Minnesotan. We're so proud of the work he does. And oh, by the way, we have Bishop Barron, who's just kind of southeast of St. Cloud. And so we're just so blessed by these beautiful apostles of the word, a beautiful apostles of the Eucharist, who continue to touch the world in so many creative ways. And we just hope, right, bringing all the beautiful forces of the church together in Indianapolis is going to be an encounter, again, that people can go home and say, you know, I've seen Jesus with new eyes. I've known him with my heart, and I want to give everything back to him. And so this is really the whole purpose of this Eucharistic procession and the Congress that really should light some beautiful fires across our whole country.
Well, Father, you can add your name to the list of great folks serving in Minnesota, speaking so well for the Lord and for the Eucharist as well. We're pleased to have you along today as well. Now, part of the joy that you have in ministering where you do is working with several Catholic schools in the area. And talk about what it's like to help those little ones kind of be turned on to the true presence of our Lord in the Eucharist, maybe for the first time.
Yeah, well, as we know, right? I mean, children, anyone out there who has children or grandchildren know their honest curiosity, right? Even during the Easter season, even now I have the children asking me about different signs and symbols in the church. You know, what is that Paschal candle all about? What, why did we have that, you know, all those people baptized? And what was going on there? The oils, we just had Chrism Mass, right? And so the children, their questions, I guess, really force us to find new language to communicate, right? To find sometimes simpler language to put into words what we really believe, you know? And when we talk about the Eucharist, you know, they too, these second graders come and look at you and be like, oh, you're telling me this is God? You're telling me this is Jesus? Yes, that's what I'm telling you. You know, and so it just, it spurs us on, I think, to deepen our own articulation and interiorization of the truths of the faith. And so anyone who's been a teacher, well, all of us are teachers, right, Glenn? But to be in the schools is so very powerful. And really, as part of our visit of the Lord Jesus to St. Cloud, we're going to be having what we call a family-friendly holy hour, right, where we invite parents to bring their kids to adoration. And we let people know it's going to be a little louder than normal, but this is a beautiful way in which children can be taught how to pray before Jesus. And in teaching them, like I said, they often teach us, right? I mean, they go up and they have such just that beautiful, pure heart that comes before the Lord. And they just so want to be filled, and they just so want to be, they want to know what's going on. I think all their senses are fully alive. And that can be a renewal for each one of us who then, again, not just explain the Eucharist to children, but try to model prayer for them. We try to show them to say, this is what you do. And this is how we can really come to know what Jesus wants for your life. To a fuller way. And so, yeah, anytime we can be around families, Glenn, around our schools, there's such a powerful way where Jesus wants, you know, he says, let the children come to me and do not prevent them, for the kingdom of God belongs to such as these and belongs to all of us, right? That we're called to be more childlike as we come before the Eucharist.
It can be quite a journey to appreciating the Eucharist as well as an adult convert, growing up Lutheran. I mean, we even knelt at the rail in the church I grew up in, so it was very reverent there, not seeing it quite the same way, of course, as the Catholic Church, all the way to non-denominational environments where it was a little swig a 7-Up and an oyster cracker to represent the body and blood in not the best way, perhaps. But I remember the impatience kind of in going through the RCIA process. And when can I, when is it my turn? And my wife, who came through at the same time as myself on that Easter vigil when we came into the church and she received for the first time, she was smiling like a kid at Christmas. She had been anticipating for so long. And so that a year like this might rekindle our joy along with the reverence for that. What's it going to be like getting hopefully up to 80,000 Catholics under one roof celebrating the Eucharist in Indianapolis?
Yeah, well, Glenn, I've heard so many stories of people's powerful encounters with World Youth Days. You know, sadly, I've never been to a World Youth Day myself. I spent, you know, plenty of time in Rome and seeing grand celebration of canonizations and things like this. But I just think, you know, hearing those stories and how much those events and moments impacted people's spiritual journey, I'm just so eager to be able to witness that myself and come back as one of the, you know, those who have, I've seen the risen Lord, you know, and I want everyone to know about him. You know, he told me everything about my life, just like the, you know, the woman at the well, the Samaritan woman at the well. And so I think that's my hope. I mean, just as we know what John Paul's visit to Denver did back in the day, right, that powerful explosion of grace and all the apostolates and ministries and the powerful way now that on college campuses, right, people who are kind of in those vocational discernment moments have great Catholic resources and have great Catholic community to assist them in those parts of their journey, that would be true, right, for the home, for the parish, for the renewal so much of our faith in an age in which we really have to, we have to be so intentional, right? We have to be so supportive of one another. We have to build these small Christian communities where everyone has a home, right? Everyone has a home in the church. And so, yeah, I don't exactly know, Glenn, what the Lord is going to do, but it's going to be spectacular. It's going to be such a gift. It's going to be a wellspring of real healing and hope for so many. And I'm eager to see. I just hope people continue praying, right? Please continue to just, as much as you can, be on your knees, offer sacrifices for the graces that will flow during that beautiful, beautiful time out at the Congress.
Well, and Father, just one more parting thought in trying to understand the Eucharist. It can be complicated. We can maybe not know what it is. We can appreciate what it is. We can, you know, kind of have a lifelong learning to appreciate what it is. But as far as a takeaway from this year and moving forward to grow deeper and realizing what we have there, can it be that just realizing that Jesus, the Lord, Creator, Savior of the universe, is right there in front of us every time we're at Mass, and that can trump any kind of differences or misunderstandings or confusion we might have about theology and all of that. But the fact that Jesus is right there should put a lot of the other things to rest, or at least make them seem very small in comparison.
Yeah, I think so often we think once we get our spiritual lives together, you know, I think so many of us are, we make resolutions, we make promises to the Lord. We think, okay, when I get to a certain point, that's when he's really going to use me. That's when he's going to call me. And I just remember that beautiful image of the calling of St. Matthew, right? Where Peter, where Jesus comes right into the midst of Matthew, in the midst of not doing great things. And he calls him, he points to him, he says, follow me. And Matthew's like, are you sure you know who you're talking to? And Jesus knows who he's talking to. He knows who he calls. And so that's why we don't have to be perfect before he calls us, right? That's why he wants each one of our hearts. And that's what I hope for each one of us, right? That we would come to know how much we're loved, and just the power of grace that flows through the Eucharist. And that grace is going to flow across our country, Glenn. So I just hope people are ready. I hope they're pumped up and revved up and praying, because Jesus has a gift for every single one of us in this beautiful season of grace.
Oh, we look forward to it. And, you know, we can look forward to it every day if we want at Mass as well. But invite all to join us, too, in Indianapolis this summer. Thank you, Father. Father Scott Pogacnik from the Diocese of St. Cloud, Vicar General there, joining us for some great conversation about the Eucharist, conversation about humility and true self-confidence. Harry Kramer joins us next as Morning Air continues.
Looking at life from a Catholic worldview, this is Morning Air.
On Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Come sail away, come sail away, come sail away with me, lad. Come sail away, come sail away.
Illinois' own Sticks on the program today. You're listening to Morning Air on Relevant Radio and on the Relevant Radio app. It's Glenn and Sarah in for John today. Sarah, did you know that I worked with a guy once who was from Chicago? We were working in Iowa. This wasn't one of the stations where I put a hole in the wall, by the way. But his brother had Sticks play at their high school prom.
What?
And it was right when they were on the cusp of making it big with Lady, their first tune. That was a hit, and they couldn't get out of the contractual obligation. So Sticks played the prom for his brother. And,
that sounds like just like what happens in a movie. Like that doesn't like really happen in real life. I can't believe that. That's super awesome.
No, I mean, I wouldn't be making that up, just making up stuff just to puff myself up and build myself up. That wouldn't be humble, as we talk about humility during our next segment here. How about that? Radio announcers talking about humility. Although sometimes I find, Sarah, you know, living life out on the air for a few hours every day can be a great school in humility sometimes.
Yeah, well, I think people expect you to be able to say a bunch of things and that they make sense and that they're worthwhile for them to listen to. And we're just like everyone else. So sometimes we have really nothing important or good to say, but we got to try to pretend like we do. So here we go.
Oh, we oughtn't pretend. We ought to be. To be honorable and honest and authentic about what we do. But sometimes those humility lessons come even if you didn't think you signed up for them. But we're going to talk genuine humility, not false humility, and true self-confidence in that balance with that. With us today, once again, professor at the Kellogg School of Management, former CEO of Baxter, best-selling author, and regular guest here on Morning Air, Harry Kramer joins us today. Harry, great to have you along.
Hi, Glenn. Always good to be with you.
Well, hey, love to talk about humility in terms of, not only the radio, but in terms of management and leadership and the role of true humility and self-confidence and a little bit of a balance there as well. How important is that in the whole world of business?
I think it's incredibly important, Glenn, because as we know, there are some people that we work for, there are some leaders where, you know, it's all about them. They have a big ego. Sometimes it almost become like a narcissist. The reality at the end of the day, no one likes working for these people. And if you think about it, as you know, Glenn, if you got a job to get done, it isn't about you. It's about, can you attract people who really want to work for you? And obviously when you're a single contributor, you know, it's what are you doing? But as a leader, whether you've got two people, five people, 30 people, you know, are you attracting people that they really want to work for you? And you can really get the job done. And if they really think that you don't care about them and it's all about you, nothing happens. And I actually call it genuine humility, Glenn, as you said, because there's a lot of people who can act humble. They act that way. But then you watch and realize it's really all about them. It's not about me at all. So I really do believe, and particularly as Christians, we know, you know, any skill we have all comes from God anyway. So, you know, who do we think we're fooling when we act like we're, you know, we're a big shot? And we're not focused on developing the people who work for us. So I always refer to it all the time, Glenn, as do you have genuine humility? Do you realize, yes, you're pretty good, but it's because of God and it's because of the team that you have to help you get it done.
Harry, you talk a lot about balance in life and in business, and that balance, our faith really, more than anything of these two things, self-confidence or humility, teaches us that we ought to be humble. Yet our society, and, you know, through the years, people kind of want to have their important place. Even the Lord talking about it, you know, don't take that, you know, highest place at the dinner, lest somebody, you know, kick you down the line, you know. And yet we live in a society that seems to you know, help those and salute those and promote those that maybe are a little more self-confident than humble.
Yeah, so this is good example, Glenn, you pointed out, of everything. And I talk about this with groups all the time and with students, with leaders. It really is a balance, because sometimes people will be a little concerned and they'll say, well, geez, Harry, if I really am humble and I give the credit to other people, well, then nobody's going to know about me. And, you know, how will I get promoted if people don't see me? And so there is a balance here. I think if you're my boss, Glenn, you know, I do want you to know that I'm good and I'm getting the job done. However, it's because I've got a really good team. So I almost think of it, Glenn, beyond words. If you're my boss, letting you know what? I'm pretty fortunate. I'm pretty blessed. I've got some pretty good skills. However, It really is the team that's making me as valuable as I am. And I think when people can keep that balance, it becomes important. Because if you're so humble of, oh, Glenn, it's not about me, and, you know, hey, put Sarah, put somebody else in the role, well, then, you know, I never will get promoted. But how do you do it in a balanced way where your boss knows, you know what, I'm really somebody who can get the job done, but it isn't about me. It really is because I'm really fortunate to have the ability to attract really good people and to get it done. And so sometimes people will say, well, geez, do I need more self-confidence and less humility, or more humility and less? I think it really is both. And if you have a heavy dose of both, I think you're in a much better position from a balance standpoint to be recognized, but yet attract people because you really care about each person that's working for you.
Now, we have so many ways with modern technology to be self-marketers, but yet is our best marketing, our best sales pitch, really the work that we do, the work that we produce? And a good leader will look for that more than, you know, how much we toot our own horn.
Oh, I believe that's absolutely true. And, you know, I've been thinking about this a lot, Glenn. I've been writing about this because what's very interesting is if you think about our whole school system, you know, you're in school and, you know, you want the teachers to know you're really good. You're the best. You know, I'm going to get an A. And then when you first start working in your first job and you're a single contributor and you're the boss and I want you to know I'm better than John or better than Sarah, you know, Harry's really good. But as soon as you start working and having a team of people, it's no longer about you. Because at the end of the day, when I think of my career, it wasn't, you know, I did fairly well, not because I was that great. It was because I tried to create an environment that people wanted to work for me. And I got a very simple model, Glenn. If you really take the time to get to know a lot of the people on the organization and you figure out who really good people are, and you create an environment that really good people want to work for you, you're going to do phenomenally well. Phenomenally well. It's not you're the brightest person. Are you the person that people believe in and people trust and they want to work for you? And if that's true, you're going to do incredibly well. And that's, once again, that balance.
We talk about leadership, too, and your latest article dealing with this balance between humility, true humility, and true and appropriate self-confidence. Talks about, excuse me, about leading people, but not doing the work for them, but giving them the opportunity to do that work. And sometimes there are certain businesses where, you know, maybe you're running the restaurant and you're also the primary chef, you know, in a small restaurant. Radio, quite often, the program director in charge of what's on the air also does a show. I had that for a dozen or more years in previous life myself before Relevant Radio. And, you know, there is something that keeps you humble about having to do the basic work of your organization as well.
Yeah, once again, Glenn, a good point. It's another balance piece, right? If I'm the leader and I've got a team, all right, here's another balance. I want the team to know I've done a lot of those jobs. Nothing is beneath me, all right? If all of a sudden we got to move really quickly and we need to make copies, even if I'm the CEO, I'll get to a copy machine and I'll make copies for the team because I'm part of the team. And I want people to know that every single person matters. Every job matters. We're really all in this together. We really are a team. However, here's the balance. If I'm doing the work of a lot of my team members, am I really developing them? Am I really nurturing them? Are they going to develop if every time they've got a problem, I take it over? So here again, I view this as a leader, even if you're just managing one person. Well, let's turn it the other way, Glenn. If I've just become a leader and you're the one person who works for me, okay, I look at it as one of my major responsibilities is help you, Glenn, develop to your full potential. Is your full potential the role you're in? Is your full potential the fact that maybe you could become a manager or a director or a vice president? And my primary role is to help you develop to your full potential. And I'm part of the team. Nothing is beneath me. But if I'm doing the job you're supposed to be doing, how do I develop you, Glenn, to your full potential? Notice the number of times we always fall back on my favorite word of balance, because it's all about balance.
Now, sometimes in a very busy environment of someone who's tasked with managing people is also tasked with handling many other things, too. And there's not the time to maybe devote appropriate time to helping everyone in their professional development. Are there things that can be done in a practical sense? So even if it's not regular communication, at least the manager and the managees know where each other stands and they can be honest during the times they do get together.
Well, you know, Glenn, now you've opened up probably one of the most important topics that's related to this, which is all about feedback, right? I mean, if you work for me, I have a moral responsibility in my mind to provide you with feedback to let you know, hey, Glenn, you're doing a great job, but here's a couple things to work on. Here are things that we can do together to help you get better so that you can move forward. And as we all know, and I'm sure this is true of a lot of our listeners, a lot of people don't receive feedback. You know, it's sort of like if I'm looking for feedback from you, Glenn, and I say, hey, Glenn, give me some feedback. And very often the boss will say, oh, I'll give you some feedback, Glenn. Just keep doing what you're doing. Well, hard to improve if you just keep doing what you're doing. And one of the areas I think we all struggle with, and I'm sure a lot of listeners do, is that, oh, okay, this person works for me. There's things they could do to improve, but you know what? I want them to like me. I don't want to bring up a topic that, you know, may be difficult for them to hear. So I'm not going to develop them. I'm not going to bring these topics up. And I really do believe that feedback is a gift. I mean, how can you possibly improve? How can you help your team improve if you're not providing them with feedback? So it really is a gift. You're going to do it in a very responsible way. You're going to do it in a caring way. And by the way, another thing that somebody gave me an idea, which I thought was a good one, is if you're working for me, Glenn, and I want to provide and give you the gift of how you can develop, maybe sometimes instead of calling it feedback, we really ought to call it feed forward. Because I'm not doing it, Glenn, to dwell on the past. I'm trying to think about what you can do so that you'll be much better in the future. So this whole idea of it's a gift, and I'm going to help you be the best you can possibly be.
Does the great culture of this, and we talk about company culture from time to time, too, in talking with business with yourself or Dave Durand, who joins us Wednesdays at 7:30 Central here with Success and Leadership on Morning Air here on Relevant Radio and on the Relevant Radio app. But in a business culture where it starts from the top down, but where the upper management allows the middle management enough time to work properly to provide some of that feedback.
Absolutely. All of this has to start at the top. You know, again, I always remember that discussion where a lot of people will say things, and I'm trying to remember now. I think it may have been Andrew Carnegie, the steel industrialist from many years ago, had a great quote, Glenn, of the older I get, the less I listen to what people say, the more I watch what they do. Right. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you work for me and you're going to, you know, I'm suggesting that you help develop Sarah, but you never have the time to do it. And all I'm constantly doing is giving you more work to do and not giving you time to develop her. Well, then, you know, it's all talk. And I really do believe if you're serious about something, you better demonstrate it because people are going to watch. And it, once again, a lot of it comes down to, you know, do you really care about the people that work for you? Do you see that as a gift to help people develop to their full potential? There's another great quote, Glenn, that goes along the lines of people don't really care how much you know until they know how much you care. If you're the kind of person that people realize, I really care about every single person, I really want to help people develop to their full potential, you're going to be amazed the number of people that are going to want to work for you and how well you do as a result of caring for other people.
Now, we live in a culture that celebrates the self, as we talk with Harry Kramer today on that balance between self-confidence and true humility. And when we grow up in that selfie culture, as young people are today, you know, essentially everyone's taking pictures of themselves, not necessarily doing anything. Maybe they're standing in front of something cool to say that they've been there, but they're becoming known without being known for something. Is there a hard crash of reality that happens to those brought up in that environment?
Oh, I think it's a serious issue. I mean, if you end up doing so much social media that it's really all about you, it isn't going to be all about others. And again, people that are leaders, true leaders, are because people realize that they care about you. And I think one of the problems we've got right now is that so many people, as you said, are so focused on themselves, they're not focused on others. And I really believe very, very difficult to successfully run an institution or a department or an area very well if it's really all about you. Because I think we forget how smart people are. And when people realize it's all about you, Glenn, and it's not about us, then that has an enormous impact on the kind of people that are going to want to work for you.
Something that might inject some humility in management, too, probably stopping to remember that people watch and listen, and they aren't easily sold or spun on things, right? So we have to be authentic about our communication.
Yeah. What's so interesting to me, Glenn, is exactly that, that when you're one of the junior people, I can remember this myself. When I was a very, very junior person, and people up at the top would say things, I'd often wonder, do they not realize that we're pretty smart? We realize what's going on, right? And when people would say, hey, how's the company doing? Is there going to be a layoff? And they'll say, oh, no, everything is fine. Well, when you're down in the organization, you realize, wait a minute, we're not selling much. Inventory's piling up all over the place. You know, we got a serious issue here. We got a serious issue. And when you're younger, you realize, wow, do those folks really realize what's going on? But if you don't remember that, if you don't stay connected, Glenn, what ends up happening is you get to a senior role and you say, oh, I wonder whether we ought to tell them or not. Well, they already know. People are much, much smarter than we give them credit for.
Oh, they certainly are, and we ought to remember that. And again, lead with love, right? And be honest and be truthful about things, and that can build that humility. Then we can all share in that success. And maybe it's the group selfie, right? So it's more of a groupie than a selfie when we're taking that that successful picture. Thank you so much, Harry, for informing us on the balance between true self-confidence and genuine humility. Always a pleasure to have you on. There goes Harry Kramer, and look forward to a chat again in the future. Time now to continue with Morning Air and a look at today's Story Corner, something I ran across that reminded me of recent interactions with my father-in-law, who has some of his own health struggles right now. This story from one of our regular contributors, Joseph Mazzella, our story today called Spending Time with Dad. When I was a boy growing up, I looked to my dad so much. He was short and stout, but full of life. He could fix anything. Even though he came home covered in grease from his job as a mechanic, he'd still let me sit with him in his big reclining chair in the evenings. By the time he was in his 70s, however, his energy and vitality started to decline. A lifetime of smoking had brought on COPD, two types of cancer, and other health problems. And after Mom and Nana had both died, Dad moved into Nana's old trailer just up the road from me. Seeing that our time together was getting short, I started to visit him whatever I could. I helped him tie up his tomato plants, change the tires on his truck, and fix things around his house. I helped him sort through and organize the dozen different medications he was on. Most of the time we just sat, though, sipped sweet tea and talked. We talked like we never had a chance to when I was a boy. We talked about family, life, and what the future might hold. I even told him I loved him, something I'd been too shy to say as a boy. And when the cancer finally attacked his brain and he had to be moved first to a VA hospital, then a nursing home, I missed those talks and my heart ached knowing that he'd soon be taken from me. I'd grown closer to him in those last years than I had in my entire childhood. After Dad passed away, my daughter moved into his home. Now, it took me a while to get used to seeing her outside in the yard instead of him. I'd only wished that we'd had more talks together, but I could see him one more time, give him a hug, and tell him how much I loved him. Looking back now, I'm so grateful to God that I did make use of the time that I had left with my dad. He taught me so much about life, taught me so much about love, helped me to become a better child, a better father, and a better man. I love you, Dad, and I miss you. Exodus 20:12, honor your father and mother, that you may have a long life in the land the Lord your God is giving you. That's our story today. You can always access those in podcast form on the Relevant Radio app or at relevantradio.com or on Facebook, too. There's Glenn Story Corner Facebook page. You can access the text and audio daily as well. And we'd always entertain your suggestions. If you've come across a story or even written one yourself that you'd like to share with others, feel free to send it on to Morning Air, the email morningair@relevantradio.com. Well, we started the hour, Sarah, talking a little bit about Do-It-Yourself Day and thinking of dads here with the Story Corner. My dad, a carpenter who's been gone since 2005, but the kind that would fix and do all sorts of things. And yeah, I think, you know, after parents are gone, that appreciation might grow over time. And I still have a lot of his old tools around. And when I'm fixing stuff or, you know, needing something, oh, maybe that pile of stuff in the corner I don't access very often in the garage. That, you know, that was what helped to finish off the job last year with the little motor for the garage door opener. And so I still think of that and think, wow, you know, maybe 40 years ago I was in the garage handing him this particular piece here. But yeah, very good. So for Do-It-Yourself Day, have you decided to celebrate by, again, totally staying away from any do-it-yourself projects?
Yeah, that might be the best remedy. But, you know, I can always check in. I'll check in to see if my husband has something small I can do so they don't break anything too big.
All righty. Well, be careful. Hammer, saw, and screwdriver in hand. Patrick Madrid is next with Patrick doing his best and Cyrus telling him to be careful. Patrick Madrid Show is next after the news with Brooke as we continue here on Relevant Radio and on the Relevant Radio app.